welcome to another episode of GT Radio. I'm Tino Magnetta. Tonight I have the most amazing woman and a very, very good friend of mine, Erin Lovzo, VP of Marketing and Commerce at Marcus Hotels and Resorts. Welcome, Erin.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you.
How are you tonight?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for coming on. So let's start a little bit about talking about your past and, you know, kind of like when you grew up and how your parents were like and, you know, that kind of thing, the roots of your the beginnings.
Sure. So I grew up in Byron, Illinois. It's near Rockford. It's a town of about 2,000 people. We had nuclear power plants, so like the Simpsons driving in. And I, after high school, went to college at Illinois State to study acting. I thought I wanted to be a famous actor. And my parents said they would pay for it if I had a fallback career. So I chose a fallback career of arts management and being able to do my own 501c3. I don't think that's exactly what they were thinking when they thought of fallback career, but I went after it. And then when I graduated college, I decided I didn't want to live near home. I wanted to go either West Coast or East Coast. So I worked at Olive Garden for 2 months. I saved up about $800. I was a very, very bad server. And I packed up my car and headed out west. And I thought I was heading to L.A., and I stopped in Vegas and realized that I could not afford L.A. to save my life. Not a chance in hell. And so I had $800. So I found a $600 apartment for 2 months because they had found a dead body there. And so 1 month free. $100 mattress off of the back of some guy's truck. And I did not have box springs because I didn't know what they were. So I didn't know to ask for them. And then I ate Jack in the Box until I could find a job. So through growing up, my parents, they're both in healthcare. So they're not, like, they thought I was going to be a doctor or a nurse or something along those lines. But I guess surprised them after, in eighth grade, they auditioned me for Annie. And I was put in the adult cast because I was such a large child. And after that, I was like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. Like, all these adults were great to hang out with, and I've always kind of been an old soul, and I jumped right in. So theater was kind of led me out of Illinois, and after college is what led me to Vegas.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, what your parents and what kind of people they were and what kind of, you know, what kind of things they instilled in you that you used for the rest of your life?
My mom and dad are very different people. So my mom she's someone who believes you just work hard. She always worked. I remember her being sick when I was little, and she came back and fought through it. And she's just a hard worker and a passionate person. And she doesn't really cry. She's just like, you just walk it off. We're a walk it off family. And then my dad is like, always wanted me to have friends. He believed if we took friends to the theater, he paid for the friends, right? He was your extroverted person. And they are the reason I am who I am today. They are the reason that I am as passionate and creative and empathetic as I am. I mean, I still go home now and my mom will tell me if I need to look a certain way or do a certain thing, and I just don't listen to them. I still don't think they probably understand what I do currently, but they know that I've somehow become very successful, and I believe that I owe all of it to them because they are the reason I am who I am.
Yeah, they're like your rock, both of them.
Exactly.
Tell me a little bit about...
My mom used to joke when I was a kid, I used to come home from theater and I'd sit on the edge of their bed and I would want to tell them everything about my day. And my dad would be like, you need to go to bed, like get out of our room. Cause he wanted to go to bed, but I wanted to sit there and just give them a play by play of everything that happened all day long. And to their credit, they let me do that. And I still think it's beautiful when my kids want to do that for me.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, I can imagine. It's good to have your kids tell you what's going on. in detail. It's
Exactly.
always a great thing. Yeah. So you ended up in Vegas just by chance. What compelled you to leave and sort of go on this adventure? What is it about you that journey took place?
So part of it was my parents, right? My mom is a big believer of if you live under my house, you live under my rules. And I did not want to live under her rules. So I had to get away. And I knew Chicago was too close to home. So getting to Vegas, they had a bet, which I didn't know about then, that I would spend about 6 weeks and then come crawling home. I mean, 6 weeks turned into 10 years, so it worked out. But I guess I was naive. I'm not sure. I decided that I was going to just kill it. Like, nothing was going to get in my way. And I had money. I had a milk crate and a bed, and I was going to do whatever it took to figure out how to make it. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what I was going to end up doing. And so my first job after 2 weeks was working for a psychologist's office. And at the psychologist's office, she allowed me to, like, organize, be an office manager. I was making $10 an hour. I didn't know what I was doing. I was calling insurance companies and trying to figure out, like, why bills were paid or not paid. And eventually she needed help doing VA assessments on veterans who came back from war. And I realized how sad that job was. And she told me that she knew it wasn't my dream. Would you like to apply using her computer for other jobs? And I said, yeah, I want to be an actress. So I started applying. I got a job as a box office supervisor. And we're still friends to this day. And I moved over then to work for Bally's Paris as a box office supervisor, which was amazing. And I got to work on all these different shows, Jubilee before it closed, Price is Right before it closed.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It was absolutely wonderful. And I got to meet
a
lot of people.
And those are all great
for
shows too. Oh my God. Jubilee ran for what? 30 years?
Oh, it was the longest
Something
running
like
Vegas show for the longest time.
Ever.
And
yeah.
Just get to,
great
to
show too.
Learn so
never,
much.
I saw it four or five times, never got old.
No, it didn't. And I used to take all my friends and family when they'd come to town to see Jubilee. I was like, you haven't seen a real, true, old-school Vegas show until you've seen Jubilee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then after working on that – oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So after working on that, producers, a Richard Frankel Productions, came to town, the Broadway show, and they said they wanted someone who had worked in theater. And I said, I'll do that. And they appointed me house manager. I did all front of house management for that. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I got to deal with all customer issues. I got to also go back of house and deal with all the actors. I controlled all the seats,
wow,
which was great because I was passionate about it. And
yeah.
When I was promoted, though, Caesars Entertainment put me through a management course, and they said, all new managers, directors, and vice presidents go through this manager course. It's great. I went through the course. It's an intensive 10 hours a day course for 5 days a week. At the end of the class, they said, you're a natural trainer. What do you think about joining our training team? Yes, it's like being on stage. So I joined and became a trainer. That's where I met my husband. He was a talent development HR expert. And we worked there until the recession hit. And I lost my job, just like so many people did. But luckily, Marilyn Wynn, who then became the president of Wynn and has done a lot of things, as well as their recruiter, enjoyed my company. And they said, what do you want to do? We'll help find you a new job. I said, I'll clean rooms. I don't care what I do. And I had also bought a house at like 23, which not the brightest idea I had. And they said, what do you know about internet marketing? I said, well, I have the Facebook, so there's that.
That's great.
They said, what are you – they put me in front of the corporate director at the time, Julie Hoffman. She said, why should I hire you? And I was like, I have a photographic memory. I'll never give up. I'll work long hours. But honestly, she really had no reason to hire me. But I did tell her I have a Midwest work ethic, and that I believe that Midwest work ethics have a really strong work ethic. And she said, all right, I'll give you a chance. And I had to start right around Christmas time. And I just worked my way up. I took on anything I could. I wanted to take it on and learn.
That's great. Yeah, it's an attitude, right? It's the drive that keeps you going, and the attitude that to move forward and do great things. That's amazing. Tell me a little bit about your first casino job and some of the things that you had to learn that were a little difficult for you and overcome, you know, because it was a new field for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So working in marketing at Caesars, they had said I was in charge of accounts payable, receivable. And I didn't really know what that meant, nor am I good at math. And they said, well, you have to figure out if we should pay this invoice or not. Well, the only way to really know that, to know when you look at BKV invoices or Razorfish invoices at the time on whether or not you should pay it, is to understand the contract, to understand what you were being billed for. So I just started studying everything. And then Katrina at the time, the CIO, had pulled me aside and asked me if I would help create some pretty decks based on the analytics they had. So I just started studying all the data I had in front of me. And they needed someone to run the PowerPoint in the meeting. And I volunteered and said, I'll run the PowerPoint in the meeting. Why? Because it put me in the room. It put me to understand what was going on around me. And I just started soaking it in. And so when they said, we need someone to help QA emails, I don't know what that means, but sure, I'll do it. We need someone to help run the promotions and the sweepstakes. I don't know what that means, but sure, I'll do it. And I just kept taking it on, partly because I was hourly, so I kept getting paid for every hour I worked, but also partly because I don't like not understanding something. So I wanted to learn, I wanted to grow, and that allowed me the opportunity to do that.
That's great. What was your first job at the casino? How did that happen, the whole marketing thing? How did you fall into that?
So Caesars was part of it, but then after Caesars, MGM called me, and I had known someone. They said, do you want to be an account executive at MGM? And I didn't know what that term meant. Like, what does that mean to be an account executive? I was like, it has executive in its title, so it must be important. And I met with Michael Weiss, who's now at Marriott, and he explained it to me. He said, have you ever done your own media buying? Nope. Have you ever done your own coding or tagging or reporting? Nope. And at that time, I mean, coming from Caesars, I thought I knew everything about everything. And he explained it to me, and I was like, oh, this sounds like a great challenge. So I headed over to MGM for what ended up kind of being a pay decrease, but I learned so much. I was the internal agency, or part of the internal agency the properties I managed were Monte Carlo, New York, New York, Mandalay Bay, Beau Rivage, and Gold Strike. And I worked on all of them to drive digital revenue. And it was amazing. And I remember thinking, well, this is great. If all jobs are like this, this is wonderful. Which led me to the Palms, because someone I had worked on the Monte Carlo account worked at the Palms. And she said, they need someone over here. She was leaving. She was moving out of state. And I went over and met with Stefan and Mark Carlson and sat down with them. And they said, I gave them exactly what I would need, salary, job title, et cetera. And they said, you know, that was beyond their means. But I said, I would happily send over people, like suggest people for them to hire. Well, 3 weeks later, Stefan calls me and says, all right, we can do what you asked. Will you come over? And so they kind of called my bluff. So I was like, all right. And it turns out it was this absolute wonderful experience of being able to do all things marketing with the Palms and go through a renovation. Now they've gone through a massive renovation since then, but we rolled out the new tagline, Not for Beginners. We drove a lot of revenue, and I got to work a little bit with George Maloof, but then Joe Magliarditi and the other team there, and then Todd Greenberg and Dan Lee. And got to know those guys really well. But at Palms, I say the walk into work was never the same. We walked in through the casino, and at 6 a.m., walking through and seeing people who have not gone to bed was just, I mean, there is no experience like it, right? You're just always energized. Mm-hmm. You're always revived. Everybody's on vacation.
Yep.
And so seeing everybody so happy and so on vacation, it's just a different world.
Let me ask you, what is it that drives you? What is it that makes you want to do better and do more?
I love building things. I love achieving things. I love seeing things come to life. And I'm a big believer in positivity and that it breeds more positivity. But it's about whatever our goal is, pulling a team together to go get that goal to take shape is the most important thing to me. And it's just as important how we get there as to where we get. And there's something beautiful in the journey.
Yeah, that's definitely very true. Let's talk a little bit about women in the workplace. What was it like when you started in the casino business as a woman? You were probably usually the only woman at the table, right?
Absolutely. So I definitely was one of the only women as an executive at the table. And I remember at the Palms sitting at the table as a woman and just how hard it was. And I'm sure it's changed. I'm sure there are many more women there now. But at that time, it was like I had to be one of the guys. And I remember getting pulled aside by our general counsel, who was a woman. And she said, people are going to call you a bitch. And you are not a bitch. You are a strong, independent woman. Do not change anything that you do. And I remember thinking how hard that was. But she was right. And to this day, like, people have called me bossy or that I need to know my place. And I am a strong woman. I know I am. And I'm going to hold my own next to any guy. And I don't care who you are. And I think that it's because it's unconscious bias. People don't even realize they're doing it. It's not because people go out and go, you know what, I think less of this person because they're a woman. It's totally not something that they expect or think that they're doing. They just happen to do it. And so it's reminding people when they do those things and bringing them to light so that we are, and I don't care if you're black, green, red, blue, we all bleed red and we should all be equal.
Why do you think that it's like that? Why do you think they have that attitude?
I don't know. I think they think that there is the old boys club, right? And you just have to like infiltrate
mm-hmm.
it. But this idea, like I remember coming into conversations and they'd be like, oh, this conversation isn't for you. Or we're all going out, but like you wouldn't want to go. And I was like, F you, you don't know if I want to go. Like I might want to go. But like at least invite me.
Right.
So
right.
I think that some of the times they don't even think it, or they think they're protecting you, or they think that you want to enjoy something and they don't know. The same way that I remember someone calling me his girl. I'm his girl. And I remember being like, I don't know that I'm your girl. I'm just like a strong woman at the table. You don't have like, no. So it's just a different. I honestly like to believe that people don't realize they're doing it, or they mean well, but what it does is it sets them on a different level.
How do you cope with that?
I think the best way to cope is to understand that it happens and to just be aware of it. The best thing you can do is be aware of it, and then that gives you the power to deal with it. So as long as you know that it's happening, you can call it out. I also think women should bring attention to it. I think it's the same way that any unconscious bias should be brought to attention by saying things to people like, no, you can't call me, like, no, calling me chick isn't like the right thing to do. We should discuss that. So unless I have that relationship with you or that understanding with you, you don't get to give me a new nickname, right? So I think it's just calling attention and having, I deal with a lot of things with humor. So being able to talk about it or joke about it helps people not feel as confronted when you do things like that?
Do you think there's been an evolution since you started?
I do. I think, oh, for sure. Since I started in the business, are you kidding? Like the Me Too movement, all those things, like it's been called to the forefront. I think that there is great things about it. I think that, I mean, when I started one of my jobs, I remember the recruiter telling me, like, it wasn't that long ago that women still had to wear pantyhose. And I remember staring at him going, I couldn't have worked here. Like, I definitely could not have worked here if I had to wear pantyhose. I don't even know if I own pantyhose. I'm not one of those people. And I didn't grow up during that time. So I know that for Marcus, I'm the youngest executive on the team that they've ever had. I'm the youngest female executive they've ever had. And so that's important because people have come through different generations before me. And so calling attention to the fact that things have changed is important. Again, I don't think people mean anything by it. I think they just lived through a different generation.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to the younger women coming up through the ranks that are going to encounter some of this stuff? What morsels can
you give them? To be yourself. You have to be yourself. You have to plow forward and don't let anything hold your back. And remember that when people do give you their opinion, remember who it is giving you their opinion. Because look at where they are and what they've done and why they're giving you their opinion. And then think about where you are and where you plan to go. And sometimes those don't align. And being okay with that. And saying like, you know what, thanks for your opinion, but I'm still plowing forward. And don't let anyone stop you. So many times people look for advice and they go, oh, okay, all right, I'll change. No, who's that person? Where are they? Why are you following their advice? Just be okay with your yes and plowing forward.
It's great. What are some of the things that make a marketing executive special and on top of their job? What are some of the things that they need to know and understand really well?
Well, I think more so than anything, everything's analyzed, right? You have to be able to look at analytics for everything. And this idea that when I started in marketing, the traditional marketer was the one that became the CMO, right? The person that worked in traditional marketing, bought the billboards, really focused on quote unquote brand awareness. They were the ones that became the CMO. And I grew up during digital. And so knowing that I could analyze and report on everything was very important. And so now when people say like, oh, well, we did that for brand awareness, I struggle with that. You have to be able to analyze it, whether it's through foot traffic or whatever it might be. But we have so much technology to launch something and go, oh, well, we had brand awareness, how to do. It doesn't matter. I also think that these leaders have to be able to build a team and to train and educate digital marketers and marketers. I think we do a poor job, not everyone, but we do a disservice to training digital marketers. If you go through a lot of digital marketing certifications, they train you on like very broad terms, but they don't train you on how to actually do it, right? A lot of conferences you go to, they talk about ideas, but they don't talk about hands-on, how do you do it? And so that's the big picture that people have to be able to do.
Yeah, the hands-on and the actual practical knowledge, right? Something you can't read in the book.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit, you made a transition from the casino business into the hotel business. What was that like for you and what are the differences?
I did. So in Vegas, I realized like I wanted to maybe move my kids outside of Vegas. So we started looking and I got a call from Wingstop Restaurants and they said that they were interested in me. And we talked about it for a while and I thought it was in the Midwest. It turns out it wasn't. It was in Dallas, Texas. And they said, do you want to come down and interview? And I was like, no, I've never been to Texas. I have a lot of biased opinions on what I've decided Texas is. I do not want to come there. And they said, just come. It's a free trip for you and your husband. You should come to Dallas. I said, all right, fine. So we went. And when I got off the plane, some lady was like, how are you? And I was like, I'm fine. Thanks, lady. And she's like, no, seriously, how are you? And I almost burst into tears because she seemed to really care how I was doing. And I realized in Vegas, it's a very transient city. People don't like you don't go to the grocery store and people stop to talk to you. And so I was like, there's something beautiful about this. And so I joined to lead all digital for an e-commerce for Wingstop, specifically because of the culture. And I loved it. And then got a call from Freebirds World Burrito where they said, we need a VP of marketing. I said, no, I'm busy. Like, I'm good. They called 6 months later. I had taken Wingstop public at the time. And they said, no, we really need a VP of marketing. I said, fine. So I went down there and met with them with my kids. And they were so family oriented. They wanted to meet my kids. They wanted to play with my kids. They truly wanted to understand the person as a whole. And I just thought that was so beautiful. And so I joined it, which Freebirds has better food than Chipotle. It was delicious. And then from Freebirds, unfortunately, my job was eliminated when our CEO, Bobby Shaw, left, who was amazing. And I still talk to him. Well, Bobby left and they let go of most of the executive team. And almost all of the marketing team, because they were changing the direction of the company. And I started looking. It happened right before the holidays, which if anyone's ever lost a job, that is about the most devastating time for anyone to be told that they lost their job. And I started looking, and I got a call from Viejas Casino and Resort in San Diego, and I got a call from Hathaway, an agency, and they both had great opportunities for me. And so I started looking at both of them, and I went to both companies and said, hey, I'm really interested in doing this. Would you be okay if I did both? And I went to the other one and said the same thing. And they said, sure. And I thought for sure, I was sure shit that one of them would make the decision for me. And then I'd be like, oh, cool, I'm going to go do this one because the other one didn't want me. Well, nope, they both said yes. So I did both jobs. So I was interim CMO for Viejas Casino, and then I opened and branded Willows Casino and Resort, when the Belt's only resort in Alpine Valley. And then I also became the VP of CRM and technology for Hathaway. And I traveled around working with Dairy Queen, Portillo's, Moët Hennessy, Chandon, all of these different brands, and really enjoyed it. But I was working 100 hours a week. I was traveling all the time. I was tired. And so when I got a call about Marcus, my husband's from Heartland, right next to Milwaukee, and I happened to be going on vacation. They said, do you want to stop by and chat? Okay. And so what was going to be a five-minute conversation turned into a six-hour conversation, and I just fell right into it. I fell in love with it. And the first thing I did once I joined was to build St. Kate the Arts Hotel over the past 2 years, which is a brand new, nothing like it in the entire United States, celebration of arts hotel, which I'm very, very proud of because it takes my acting degree, it takes my music love, and it brings it all to life. So, in fact, while I'm talking to you, I'm sitting in St. Kate right now.
That's great. So what exactly is that?
St. Kate is a 219 room hotel. It's celebration of arts, so we have a theater in it. A performance space, which about 100-seat black box theater called the Arc Theater. We have three restaurants and two bars, including Milwaukee's only champagne bar called Giggly. We have the Dark Room, which is a 26-seat speakeasy steakhouse. We have Aria, a three-meal-a-day restaurant, which is amazing. And we have our bar downstairs, which we worked with a local cocktail mixologist to create. We have four galleries. We also worked with the Museum of Wisconsin Art to create the only museum inside of a hotel. Other hotels have museums that loan art to a hotel, but we actually have a museum in the hotel. And this hotel, I mean, Chicago Tribune, New York Times, everybody has written about it. And we know, because I've traveled to 55 different hotels that consider themselves art hotels, that we are the only hotel like this in the United States, hands down. And it's St. Kate, based after St. Catherine, the patron saint of art.
Wow, that's amazing. And what kind of clientele did you get?
We have everybody. So we believe that St. Kate is about the creative process, and she will accept anyone. Come as you are. We just hope that you come with an open mind and that you're willing to shift perspectives. And so our clientele is very diverse. You have conservatives, you have liberals, you have people of all races and generations that come in. The psychographic of it is really an open mind. We're looking for someone, the common traits are an open mind, a willingness to learn, and a creative spirit. And when we find that, people really want an experience. They want to come to a hotel that isn't just a place to lay their head. They want something that's different. So we have a 110-piece seed collection. We have all of our rooms have local artists curated. We have international artists. We have a Deborah Butterfield. We have a Damien Hirst piece. There's art everywhere in this hotel. There's interactive art. There's places where you can go and be part of a rehearsal. It is truly a passion project for me. It's a passion project. I did this myself, and Kent Duncan, our Vice President of Strategy and Assets, built this, and along with our CEO, Greg Marcus, and it's something that we are just, I mean, I'm unbelievably passionate about it, and it's one of 21 hotels that I work on.
Wow, that's incredible. That's how do you find it different than the casino business?
Well, there's no games. It's different because the way we optimize revenue, right? In casinos, you give hotel rooms basically away because you know they're going to play. In the hotel traditional business, you're really focused on the average daily rate. Now, I think that's shifting, right? And revenue optimization is shifting because you need to look at the guest folio, overall folio, and not just the rate they paid for their room. I think that hotels in general, just personal opinion, are a little behind casinos. It's interesting, coming from Vegas, coming from the casino business, I felt like coming out of it, like I'd be really interested in hotels, and I love hotels, but like I immediately want to find other ways to create revenue in the hotel, which I think the casinos do really well.
Interesting. And what are some of the things that you find the marketing strategies that are different from casino to hotel? Do you use the same kind of strategies, or do you have to tweak that out a little bit?
I do. I think any business I've been in, casino, hotel, restaurants, et cetera, what you're looking for is the customer has a crave. They have something that they're craving, whether it's wings, it could be a hotel room, it could be an escape, and it's fulfilling that. And so you can use a lot of the same channels. You're just fulfilling it in different ways. And so it's really about what you say on those channels. But that's what's allowed me to switch industries so much, is because the crave is still the same. There's still something that jumps that customer from, hey, I just want to eat, to I want to eat wings. Or I just want to go to a hotel, to I want to go to that hotel. And so that is always the same. It's figuring out what does the customer want.
Yeah, the sweet spot where they're gonna convert and take the action.
Exactly.
Where do you think we're at right now in the whole resort kind of hotel business in relation to, you know, the evolution that's happened? Where are we? You know, is there a lot more to go? Is it overbuilt? Is there a lot more left?
We're definitely saturating, right? Every state will tell you that we have more. We're getting to the point where we have more supply than we have demand. I believe that Marriott and Hilton, I mean, they're franchisees, right? They go out and find people who want to build a Hilton or build a Marriott. They're really marketing machines. They put your name on it if you pay them. And so with that, you become oversaturated. And so what do? When they see independence pop up, they create their soft brand, an autographed, Curio, whatever it might be, to create more brands to do that with. And yeah, we're oversaturated. We know that. Everybody knows that. So you have to start to then differentiate yourself. And you have the low end, like you pay a certain fee and you get like a head and a bed and a free breakfast and that's it. Convenience, select service. You have high end that they're going to pay a higher price. They get higher amenities. But then we're starting to see more and more outside of Vegas, obviously, experiential hotels. What do they get? What does it feel like? What is it? It cannot just be a heads and beds. approach. It has to be what is the full experience the customer receives. It also heightens the need for great service. But then you have the salary, the wage going up, right? That, and with wage going up and it costing more to have that great service, then you start looking into, well, what do we do? Do we scale back? Do we not scale back? Do we find an A-plus player instead of having two C players? And so it's a constant struggle, not just in Milwaukee, in every market. As the same struggle Vegas deals with, right? Oversaturation of room, not enough people in that market to fill those rooms.
Mm. So you do think that there's it's becoming saturated, right? There's too much inventory?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I just read a report that said by 2021, we would hit our peak of oversaturation.
Mm. So the function of the marketing people becomes even more important when there's more demand, not more demand, more inventory, but, and the demand is the same as it was when you didn't have as much inventory, correct?
Exactly. You have to differentiate yourself. You can no longer just be any hotel. You have to set yourself apart and say, here's why I'm different. Here's why you want to stay with me. Here's why I'm better than X. Here's why my reviews are better than X, and all of the above.
What do you think are the trends that will emerge in the future? What do you see as like the cutting edge stuff? I know the hotel that you're in right now is a new concept and is probably generating a good amount of occupancy because it has this new trend. Do you see more
exactly.
of that happening?
We've blown
what are they?
I think experiential hotels will continue to happen. We've seen boutique and independent hotels pop up all over the place. We've seen, just like we've seen in every other area and business, that independents have started to fight back, right? Shop local has become a thing, right? Everybody, shop local, don't go to Walmart, do that. It's the same thing in hotels. Don't go to Marriott, don't go to Hilton. You could have an independent hotel experience. And so we've seen that become so prolific. And I think it will continue happening that people will go, hey, I don't need to pay Marriott for this. I don't need, and I'm sure someone from Marriott or Hilton, I'm going to get my hand slapped for saying this, but like someone will, they need a different experience. They want, you want to be able to go to a place like this. The same reason that there's all like New York and Chicago and stuff become these feeder areas for these things where mm-hmm. because they're urban, because there's so many population, you see them happening. Experiential museum, quote unquote museums happened and pop-ups where you could go take pictures. There were like Instagrammable moments became a big deal. 29 rooms, the refinery. And now you see them everywhere because they became popular. And I think independent hotels will continue to do that. And people will look for those things because they want an experience, not because they want the same old, same old.
Right. So what you're saying is it's more about the experience than actually sleeping in the bed, which is part of the experience, but there's much more to it than that.
Absolutely. Having a nice bed, having all those things, that's the bar. Just having those things, you have to have those. The experience comes above and beyond.
Incredible. Well, sounds like you got an incredible hotel there that they've created. What is it? How do they develop these concepts? Do you go around the country looking at other things, and then what do you do? Get in a room and brainstorm?
Yeah, that's so when I started here, my boss, Greg Marcus, said, I need you to figure out what we're going to build. I think I want to make it an art hotel. I'm not sure. And so he set out, Ken Duncan, our vice president of strategy and assets, and myself, and said, go figure out what we're going to build. We had looked at 21C hotels, which are art hotels and museum hotels. And then we looked at 55 more hotels. And as we're looking at them, we're trying to figure it out. Well, my degree is in acting, so I want a theater in it. Our CEO is a jazz pianist, and so music makes sense. His wife is from Project Runway and was on there and is a fashion designer, so that makes sense. And so as we talk about it, it's like, why aren't we an art hotel? We don't have to be an art hotel. Let's be an art hotel. So we brought in our interior designer and our branding agency, and we all got together and we did a lot of brainstorming. And we looked at what our budget was to transition what used to be an Intercon hotel. And it just made sense. It just all fell into place. And so when people are like, what was that moment that you decided that you were going to do this? It just made sense. Why wouldn't we celebrate all art forms? Why wouldn't we do this? Why? And I remember Greg saying to me, like, you know, nobody else has done this. And I stared at him and I said, so what? Nobody else has done that. Who cares? Let's be the first. Let's be the only one that has done this. And that's a little scary. No one ever wants to be the first. But in this case, we are. And we know we are. And that's okay. I remember meeting with someone in Sarasota, Florida, Art Ovation. And they said, I said, what are you missing here? And she goes, I wish I would have built a theater. And I was like, yes, we need a theater. So it just kind of came to life through there. And then trying to figure out, what do you name it? Well, in Milwaukee, we have all of these masculine names. We have the Pfister. We have the Iron Horse. We have the Kempton Journeyman. And it's a city built on the Industrial Revolution. And as we're talking about it, nothing leans feminine. Well, St. Catherine's the patron saint of art. That just makes complete sense. And so I truly believe it was all meant to be, because it just really fell into place. And as we thought about it and brainstormed, it made sense. We now have that 110-piece seed collection. We have constant programming going on. I mean, I was just in an event that had a stilt-walking Christmas tree and a woman dressed as Marie Antoinette as a table, and dancers dressed as fairies and sugar plum fairies. And there's just always something going on in this hotel, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible what's happening. What do you think the future holds for these kind of hotels like you're building? Do you think that you're going to see more of them? Do you think that Marriott and Hilton will get into the game too, or have they already? Is this like a trend that's becoming like widespread?
I think Marriott and Hilton will try to get into the game. I think the biggest problem is taking old school mentality of hospitality and shifting it. I think we will see it shift. I think more people will want to be doing experiential, but it's going to take people who want to break something and put it back together, right? Let's not do the exact same thing we've always done. Let's try something different. I mean, casinos are the same way, right? All of these industries, the only way you create change, when you think about taxis, nobody thought about a taxi and went, oh, you know what? I want to make the taxi service better and add an app. No, Uber was completely different. They want to get you from point A to point B without effort, actually talking to someone, and they don't own the car. Like, it's not, it's more than just, hey, let's step it up. It's let's break it completely and put it back together.
Right. Rebuild it. Great. Should we take some calls?
Exactly. Sure.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question or questions for Aaron?
Hello, Tino. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, Tito. Hi, Aaron. It's Ronaldo from Dakota Magic.
Oh, wonderful.
Cool. Is it cold up there?
Oh, yeah, it is. I think we're going to be I think we got the negatives coming next week, so I'm kind of getting ready for that.
That's cool.
So I have a couple questions. The first one, it sounds like you've taken a lot of risk in your life, whether that's trying to learn new things, different industries. But a lot of successful companies and people will always tell you, you know, if you don't take that risk, you'll never be successful, or you'll never learn the outcome. Personally, what kind of risk do you see? And you certainly took a risk with this hotel. What do you see, or what would you think your next possible risk would be? Or was there one in the past that you wish you could have taken?
Oh, geez. That's a really good question. So what's my next risk? I don't know. I have no idea. And that's the great thing about risk is you don't know until you jump. I do a lot of stupid shit. And so it turns out that it's all worked out for me, thank God. But it's just taking the risk, right? I look back and there are so many things that could have gone wrong. It didn't. The same way that, like, looking backwards, like, is there a risk that I should have taken that I didn't? Maybe. I remember when I got counteroffered by Palm, and they countered me with, like, double my salary and, like, a way better job title and a bunch of stuff. And, like, they would have done anything to get me to stay. And I remember just sobbing. And I called my husband, sobbing, going, how do you turn this down? How does someone turn down this amount of money? How does someone turn down this job title? How does someone turn down that they are willing to help you find the right doctor to help you with your heart? And I remember him saying, like, sure, so what? You could take it, or you could take this risk and we can, like, leave this state. And I remember thinking, like, okay. And I went back to him and, again, sobbing, said, all right, I'm leaving. I know you've offered me everything under the sun, but I can't do it. And I think that people respect that, but at the same time, like, the safe thing would have been to stay, but I was willing to just jump. And so I've never had, I don't know that I've had a job that I've had a risk I didn't take. I guess I'm programmed to jump when there's a ledge. And worst case, I fail. And then I pick myself up and I do it again. And believe me, I failed. I think about, like, should I have ever left MGM? Should I have taken the job at Freebird because I lost my job technically? And should I have done this or should I have done that? And, like, at the end of the day, it all really worked out. And I believe that everything happens for a reason.
That's good. My second question is, again, you hit a unique market and a certain type of market with the hotel you're at now. But just kind of your thoughts on, well, the question gets thrown around in casino industry, and you know that about millennials and whatnot. Now, I know the hotel industry, Marriott and Hilton, or I think it's Hilton, they have built what you called hotels for, like, millennials. Like, a Loft, I know, for example, is trying to catch ground, gearing their market towards the younger crowd. And I think Hilton has a hotel. Now, not only that, I missed the part of how long you were in the hotel. I think forever. But what are your thoughts on those type of hotels and items like Airbnb? Is it just not a factor because it hits those different demographic groups that you're not going after? Or, I mean, just kind of your general thoughts on the whole thing.
Good question. I think that Airbnb is definitely a factor. Like, come on. They created a thing model where you can basically go live in someone's home. Like, that's great. And then the argument was, oh, people aren't going to want to stay there because they're definitely going to want to stay in a hotel. So then Airbnb said, challenge accepted. Let's create an experience thing and all of the stuff to add on to it to make it even more competitive. So, yeah, it is. I mean, in Milwaukee alone, they booked last year like over $4 million in Airbnb. Definitely an issue. Millennials, I hate the term millennials because, like, first of all, I'm like an elder millennial. I'm like the mother of millennials and maybe a zennial. There's so many names for me, but, like, when people explain millennials, I'm like, I'm not that person. That's not me. And so I hate bucketing people, right? Marketers are the only people in the whole world that are still racist, right? We're like, we go after African-American men who are 18 years old. No, no, we don't. We go after a psychographic. We go after a type of person, not a look of a person. And so being okay to talk about that. But no, I mean, whether it's a curio, an autograph, whatever it might be, they're competing with me, and I am going head-to-head with them. The only time I lose is if someone's a points addict, right? They have to have the Hilton points, the Marriott points. But I'm going to do better in the experience lane. I'm going to do better in the ability to get things through the finish line without having to deal with red tape. And so, yeah, those are all issues and all barriers, but it's something to be aware of, and they're all competition.
Great stuff.
All right. Thank you.
Great stuff. No problem. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Good stuff. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Aaron?
Tino. Hi, good evening. This is Oz. Hi, Aaron.
Hi.
Hi. Just listening, very fascinating, your background, the way things have just happened and in some ways organically for you, and just interesting hearing you talk about palms. I actually live, I'm based in Vegas. I've been here for about 17 months working in the gaming industry. And I live quite close to Palms, and I don't know the last time you was there, but the renovation it's gone under is spectacular. I was just curious to ask, really, with regards to the gambling industry, which you spent so much time in and learned so much of your craft through the various companies you worked for, what you miss about it and what you don't, kind of, you're like glad to be away from, having moved out of the industry.
I miss a lot of it. I miss walking into work, and like I have pictures that show up in my time hop of like people passed out on tables. Like, I miss that. I do. I know that sounds completely ridiculous, but to walk in, I remember walking into the casino and there was a guy in a suit at 6 a.m. completely wasted standing at an ATM. And there's another guy in a suit smoking a cigarette about 4 feet behind him by the cigarette tray, also wasted. And he's yelling at the guy at the ATM who's swaying back and forth trying to hit the numbers, like, you got this. You got this. You're going to do this. You're going to win. And I kept stopping and thinking, of course he's going to win. It's his money in the ATM. But it just, like, those things don't happen. I remember the first time Flo Rida, who I thought his name was, I didn't know what his name was, performed at the Palms, and I remember not being able to get out because I didn't know who he was, being able to get out to the pool, and the security staff had to literally lift me in my suit, not bathing suit, like three-piece suit, to the stage with all these people in their oily bathing suits so I could take pictures. And then he tweeted, hey, Vegas, do you want to blow my whistle? And I remember thinking, like, oh, my God, we should tweet back. And we had to Google it and figure out what blow my whistle meant. And then after I Googled it, I was like, maybe we shouldn't tweet back. But those are like, you don't have those experiences anywhere else. Like, that's so much fun and so different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think that's there's brilliant. Anything Definitely. I don't. Like, there's nothing that annoyed me. I loved Vegas.
Wonderful. That's great to hear. I suppose another question as well is that just the way you've talked about, okay, right, I don't know what that is, but I'll give it a go and I'll do it. You've got a very positive personality and positive nature about you, very good energy. How much of that is affected consciously for you when you go into those situations? And even now, like you said, you're like the mother of the millennials, and sometimes millennials can be all a bit too, they need to have all the information before they complete a task or try and do a task. How much of kind of, if you like, visualization and positive energy is affected to you? Or is that just something you don't really, you know, task as such, and it just happens organically?
Good question. So first of all, I love your accent. Second of all, I love how well you listen. Holy crap. So my Gallup Strength Finder, like on the Strength Finder, if you read Strength Finders, I believe in the Gallup Strength Finder. My five top strengths are woo, which is influencing others, which I also, like, I like to think when my mom used to call me manipulative, I think she meant woo, like I'm an influencer.
Mm-hmm.
Positivity, communicative, includer, meaning I like everybody to be at the table. Like, I want to make sure no one feels left out. And then activator, meaning let's go, let's do this, let's get this done. And positivity is just in my nature. So if someone's negative, I like stare at them long enough. Like if my employees come to me with a problem and I'm like, so what's the solution? Like the positivity is in finding the solution. And it is, it's 100% natural. What actually drains me or makes it hard for me is is negativity, is people saying like, well, I don't know what to do. And it drives me nuts because I'm like, what do you mean you don't know what to do? Have you thought through it? Right? I don't understand people who live in a negative world. I only understand people who think, all right, well, what's next? Why not? Like, and shit happens, right? Like, bad things happen in our lives.
Right.
And believe me, a lot of bad things have happened in my life. But, like, why talk about them? Why care about them? Like, it's what made me who I am, and I don't want to lose them. I don't want to – I look back, and I don't want to give them up. But let's focus on how we can build forward. Otherwise, like, who cares? Like, why are you living then if you have this negative attitude? And there are people that wake up and they're like, oh, I hate my life. I don't understand it. Those people who are like, I hate my job, get a new job. Go do something else. Be homeless. I don't care. Whatever
Absolutely.
You want to do. But don't complain about it, right? There's always another option other than positivity. And if you choose that option, fine. But I'm going to always err on the side of, like, happiness and being able to solve something.
Amazing. That's fantastic. Okay, one last one. This is a little bit more just kind of off the cuff. You talked about acting, and that's something that resonates with me. When I was coming up and going through education, that was the thing that sort of struck a chord with me and felt it was the thing I was best at. I always got the best report card for my acting and going to classes and stuff. So that was my, you know, intended pursuit as well. How much of the actress, actor in you kind of comes into play in your day-to-day life and the work side of things as well? And is that something you'd still look at doing? Is that a possibility?
Oh, my gosh. You asked the best question. No, so I don't do it because I'm so I think of all the things that I'm self-conscious of, it's playing the piano and it's acting. Because it's something
wow.
I know that I do really well, but I don't like doing it in front of people because then they would they would judge me. And so it's my vulnerable place, right? It's the place that I think about and I'm like, oh, I don't want to actually, because if you're not an actor and you go act, people are like, oh my God, you did so amazing. But if people have this expectation that you're a great actor and you act, then they all of a sudden start judging you. So, I mean, honestly, could I? Yes. But do I? No, because it's still my, like, my vulnerability spot. Like, I'll talk and teach and get on stage in front of hundreds of thousands of people and tell my story. But if you ask me to, you know, star in A Star is Born and sing, I'd be like, nope, can't do it. So, but when I think about what I do with theater now, there are two things that I took away from theater school. One, that I use now. Yes. Say yes, right? In improv, everything they teach you, there's a Second City book that's all about leadership. Say yes, right? Involve yourself. Like, don't be the person that closes doors. Don't say no. Don't say, no, we can't do that. Say yes and. Yes and. And then the other thing is don't give up. They told me in acting school, the way you become a famous actress is to not give up. Do not stop trying. And I have friends now who are on Broadway in Hamilton and are doing amazing things and are on TV shows, and I turn on my TV and I'm like, I know him. And I turn on, I turn on the radio and I'm like, I know him, and I know I'm not doing it, but what they did is they didn't give up. They didn't say, okay, that person doesn't want me, or I'm too fat or I'm too thin. And I remember being, I was overweight in college. Like, I had gastric bypass. I lost 150 pounds. And before having it, I remember someone telling me I'm too thin. It was the first time I had heard that because I was like 350 pounds. And to be told I can't do that show because I'm too thin, I burst into tears. I was like, you've got to be effing kidding me. I am like the fattest person here. You're telling me I'm not fat enough. But guess what? You can't do anything about that. Hey, you're not blonde. Hey, you're not brunette.
Correct.
Hey, you are too tall or too short. Those are things you can't change. But guess what? You cannot give give up. Keep going, keep trying, keep doing those things. So say yes and don't give up.
That's amazing.
That's great.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's been great speaking to you and hearing you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good
day. Okay. That was fantastic. Aaron, we've run out of time. It was a great interview. Thank you so much for coming on, and you have a happy.
Thank you, guys.
Happy New Year and Merry Christmas and all that great stuff. And we're looking forward to touching base with you again in the future.
Likewise. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Have a great night.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was fantastic. Aaron's a pretty amazing person. So Christmas, New Year's, have a great time. Enjoy yourself, family, friends. I know you're going to be eating a lot, so have a great one. And we will see you January 13th, which is a Monday, with Dr. Thomas Doulian from Barona, head of HR. He's a pretty incredible guy. And I'm looking forward to talking to him, and you'll also enjoy what he has to say. A very different angle on customer service. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. You have a great holiday, and we'll talk to you soon. Ciao.